Darkening of the Light is a tough read because of what it says, just like some ecological pronouncements are tough to read because of what they say, because it's getting a little bit near the truth, and we live in a culture that likes everything, particularly its spirituality, sugar-coated. But I did think that, although I say I'm reluctant to do a how-to, because I never really like telling people what to do. Firstly, because they misunderstand it. Secondly, because they get it wrong. And thirdly, because they're not going to do it anyway. It's enough to tell people 20 minutes a day of meditation and do the zikr. But I did think that maybe, because what I'm talking about is actually quite essential, that I might offer a four-point plan. I don't think I've ever done that before, but here goes. A four-point plan in response to the darkening of the light, the end of human civilization. Or even more tragic, the loss of meaning in the soul of the world. And so maybe that merits a four-point plan. I even wrote them down. And that's quite something for me. The subtitle of this book, Witnessing the End of an Era, is really the first of the four points, witnessing. This is a very, very important esoteric spiritual practice, to witness. It means a state of awareness that sees without judgment, without expectation, without wanting anything, and particularly without wanting anything to change. This is really, really important to witness. There is actually an ancient description of the Sufis. They're called a brotherhood of migrants who keep watch on the world and for the world. Part of our spiritual practice is just to watch, to witness. Initially, you watch yourself. You become aware of yourself. You just watch yourself. It is actually a very important step on spiritual self-development. Not to want anything, not to try to change yourself, just to watch yourself. You develop this conscious awareness that is not just the ego. It's the beginning of bringing the consciousness of the self into this world. You watch yourself, you watch your reactions, you watch the patterns by which you live by. You don't try to change them, because as you know, most people, when they try to change patterns, they try to change them from the same consciousness that created them. So they just create a variation. And that is, of course, one of the central problems of our present ecological crisis, is we are bringing the same mindset to this predicament that has created it. And there is a different approach, and part of the work that I've been asked to do is to share how certain mystical principles can apply to a very practical predicament that we find ourselves in. Which is why, beginning in the year 2000, I was given all these teachings about oneness and how they can apply to an evolving culture. Why they are important to our civilization, our global civilization. These mystical principles of oneness, of unity, of being, and that they have a very practical application. And witnessing is another spiritual principle that has mostly been kept secret. Those who witness, they just witness. They don't talk about it. But in this time of crisis, witnessing has a very valuable and important and powerful role to play. And the Sufis actually witness with the eye of the heart, which is a single eye. When thine eye is single, thine whole body shall be full of light. That's from the Bible. Maybe I can just share with you how my day begins, because that will give you a sense of how it is for me. I like to get up early and I begin with a cup of tea, followed by meditation, followed by prayer. And then I just go and I used to do it on the radio, now I do it on the internet, just to see what is happening in the world. And then I answer emails and then I go for a walk. But this just being aware of what is happening in the world, it was something Mrs. Tweedy actually taught us. She was often awake in the night and she would listen to the world service. And she said it was like seeing a chess player play chess, to see things happening in the world. Not from any judgmental point of view, just an awareness. We are all global citizens. This is something actually Thich Nhat Hanh says very clearly. We will survive and thrive together with our Mother Earth, or we will not survive at all. It's nobody else's fault. It isn't anywhere else. Oneness, which means we are a global community, and I think as responsible global citizens, we need to be aware of what is happening in the world. For example, to be aware of the tremendous oil spills that have come from in Nigeria that are ruining a whole culture. To be aware of what happened in Japan. You don't have to scour the newspapers. You know, 10 minutes a day, if you are just aware and attentive, will make you aware of what is happening globally. So you are aware. We are part of a global community. Nothing is somewhere else. The English have this expression called NIMBY. Do you know this in America? Not in my backyard. Everything is now in our backyard. And we need to be aware of it. It doesn't mean you have to go and do anything about it. Because awareness, consciousness is very powerful. And particularly consciousness that does not judge, that is just awareness. It is really the greatest gift humanity has. And interestingly, it is something that was developed in the spiritual traditions of the East, but not in the West. Consciousness. In the West, we've learned how to think. In the East, they learned how to be conscious. Through meditation, we actually develop a quality of still consciousness. And you need that to watch yourself, to be aware of your own patterns. And you bring this into life, just to be aware of what is happening, just to witness. There is actually a potency in witnessing. It stops something getting worse in a particular way. And part of the reason I wrote this book was because it wasn't being witnessed what was happening. Outwardly there was an awareness, but inwardly, in the inner worlds, there was no witness of what is happening. There was no awareness. Now, I have a particular training, gift, awareness. As I said, I was taught in my early 30s how to go consciously into the inner world, and the energies, the inhabitants of the inner world taught me how to be there. So it is a familiar territory to me, although I must admit in the last, particularly in the last 5 or 6 years, I saw things in the inner world while in full consciousness in this world that I sometimes really did not want to see. I saw what was being lost, and it was so painful for me that I would block it out, sometimes for months at a time. Something that should be there isn't there anymore, or there was just hardly a trace of it. And I used to ask, I said, why did you make me see this? There's nothing I can do about it. You know, at least if you're going to be shown something, be allowed to make a response. But I was just told, you have to see it. You have to see it. You have to see it. I saw the light going out. And I'd seen the light there. I'd seen this light which is needed for spiritual transformation. I'd seen it come into the world. I saw its potential. I was shown in a whole series of visions for about 2 or 3 years how it could change humanity. I always say when I first wrote about this in Working with Oneness, I thought that book would be a bestseller because I thought everybody would say, wow, this is what it means. Now reading it 10 years later, I realize, of course, it's not really understandable. So just as one witnesses the light, and that is something in our own practice, we learn to witness, we watch the light within us, or we watch the light of God. We are aware of it. We don't try to change it, we watch it, we are attentive. There's actually a very moving passage at the end of King Lear, one of Shakespeare's great plays, when the aging king and his favorite daughter, Cordelia, are imprisoned at the end of the play. And he talks about how they will watch what is happening in the court, who's in, who's out. Then he said, we will take upon us the mystery of things as if we were God's spies. We will take upon us the mystery of things as if we were God's spies. And when I read that, I was amazed because there is a whole esoteric tradition that Sufis are God's spies. We are his eyes and ears in this world. Ibn al-Arabi says that the mystic is the pupil in the eye of humanity. Because the mystic sees. And this is part of the responsibility of mystical consciousness, to see. Not to say it should be like this, not to react to what one sees, hopefully, but to see. We are the pupil in the eye of humanity. We learn to watch. We take upon us the mystery of things as if we were God's spies. And somebody has to see what is happening. It's not absolute truth, but it is relative truth. And there are people who are aware of what is happening ecologically, and you can read about it. I read a very moving report the other day of somebody who has sailed from Australia to Japan, single-handed sailing, and they'd made this journey 10 years before. And they said, what was extraordinary about the journey this time, sailing from Australia to Japan, was the silence. Because the last time they sailed, all along the journey, there was the cry of the seabirds. They were all in the air around the boat. And this time, there was no cry of the seabirds. There were no seabirds because there was no fish. He said 10 years before, each day for his meal, he would put a line out over the edge of the boat and catch a fish. There were no fish this time. And then he said in one part of the journey, there was just so much rubbish. It's one of the things that also came from the tsunami. A whole ocean full of rubbish. And he just watched it. He was just aware of it. So this is a very important spiritual principle, to watch, to witness. To witness what is happening in the outer world, I think we have a responsibility. Just to be aware, because it is all our backyard. They're all our neighbors. You don't have to spend hours doing it, but you have to have an awareness. Because we are God's spies. And some of us have the ability to see what is happening in the inner world. And I say what was for me was so devastating was to see this light going out. This light that could have transformed the world. And it's not there anymore. And to me, I always call it one of the great unspoken tragedies of this present time. Because I know how precious that light is. I see it in a human being, in an individual. Because part of my work is to blow on that light in an individual. The light that belongs to the soul, to help the human being to transform. Without that light, there can be no transformation. This belongs to the esoteric body of the human being, like I said in the Taoist tradition, they create a body of light with certain breath practices. We just blow on it and it gets loved in it. It transforms the human being. In thy light thou shalt see light. or light upon light. Light rises towards light, and light comes down upon light, and it is light upon light. And that is how a human being is transformed. The light inside it and the light of the soul is blown on, is nourished. And that is what transforms you. Your practice is just to create a container so that that process is not contaminated. If you don't create the container, if you don't do the practices, then energy comes in to disturb it. And just as happens to an individual, as I have shared with you over the years, happens also to the whole. We are the microcosm of the macrocosm. And there was a certain light, and human beings were given certain practices, and they didn't use them properly. So the light is gone. It won't come back in our generation. It may come back in a different way. We missed an opportunity. It's part of the story of humanity to miss an opportunity. And with that, there comes, of course, grief. And I think the second of this four-point strategy is to allow yourself to feel grief. I mentioned that a couple of weeks ago I was on this Bioneers panel on the subject of spiritual ecology with Joanna Macy, whose work I admire very much, and Dikila, who is a Tibetan environmentalist, works for the World Wildlife Organization, as well as for His Holiness the Karmapa. And they both talked and talked and talked about grief. And they said, for people in the environmental community, the grief is sometimes too much to bear. But Joanna specifically said it's really important to acknowledge the grief, to feel what is happening. Witnessing is very objective. You are just aware of it. But we are also human beings. We have hearts. And we have to also to feel what is happening. You don't want to get overwhelmed by it, but I think you can't live at this time without feeling a certain grief. For myself, sometimes in those past few years when I was shown the grief or the sadness, for me, sadness was sometimes immeasurable. When I knew what it could have been, just like on a human level, when I see the spiritual potential inside somebody and I see they decide not to live it. Years and years ago, I was talking to Mrs. Tweedy about this, and I said, you know, are you ever disappointed in people? And I expected her to say, oh no, you know, every human being, they are just the way they are, and I accept them completely. And she said, and how? when you see this, the light that is not lived, there are very few things that really touch me very deeply. One is to see the light that is lived, and then there is this, which is incredibly happy when you see somebody surrender before God. And because I know what that means. You know what that means. And then there is this deep sadness when you see an opportunity that has been missed, and I know how rare that opportunity is. You get, if you're lucky, two or three opportunities in a lifetime. Sometimes just one. That was actually a story that Bysab told. There was Miguel Serrano. There is the only book apart from Mrs. Tweedy's that mentions Bysab. There was this Chilean journalist who went around India looking for teachers. And he came to Bysab's place. And his lovely description of this Hindu Sufi saint who would sing in his garden at night, sing these songs. And he had an interview with him. And Bysab told him this story of the man who spent his life looking for Buddha or Krishna. I can't remember which. Was Krishna or Buddha? I don't know. Krishna or Buddha. And one day he was hungry and went into the chapati shop. And while he was in the chapati shop, Buddha walked by. And he missed the opportunity. And there was a poignancy about it because you can see from the way this chapter is written that the author was actually looking for something, and here was the something he was looking for, and he had no awareness of that. There's nothing in the chapter in the book, it's just another Indian saint. And there is Bysab actually telling him the story of what he is doing and how he is with Baisabh without being aware of it because he's in a chapati shop. And it's this poignancy of a missed opportunity. There is the enormous grief of what we are doing to this beautiful planet. We are more protected in North America, and where we live in Inverness, we are tremendously protected from actually seeing it viscerally, from experiencing it. There are places in the world where it is. It's like an open wound. And I say a lot of the environmentalists who are actually on the front lines of this physically, there's just grief at what is being lost, what is being destroyed, relentlessly being destroyed. And for me, there is this incredible sadness because I see in the inner worlds what is being lost, the light that isn't there anymore, this desolation, this inner wasteland that 20 years ago there were still flowers, 20 years ago there was still a spring. And something is being lost that cannot be replaced, not in our generation. And I don't know what it will take to redeem it. I think it requires a certain maturity to be able to hold this grief, to be able to hold this sadness. But it means one's heart is engaged. We are human beings. This is our planet. This is where our children, our grandchildren will grow up in. And what we are doing is almost unspeakable. If you think that the outer is just a reflection of what is happening in the inner, because that is the esoteric tradition, the outer is a reflection of what is happening in the inner, then sometimes I'm glad that nobody can see what I've been shown, what that means. I wrote this chapter about it called Hungry Ghosts. So that is the second of the four-point plan. First is witnessing, and then feeling the grief, the sadness. Just be aware of it. For me, the response, because there has to be a response, we are human beings, the first response is prayer. And that's why I wrote in the Prayer of the Heart, this chapter on prayer for the earth, and it's a practice I've taught you, just to put the earth in your heart, when you are in prayer, when you are in meditation, and offer it to God. Because the earth needs to be prayed for, and prayer is in a way, the first primal response. I was actually very interested to read in a magazine recently from a book called Into the Light, where somebody who is working with angels, with people before they die. And he said that the angels said, "The ability to overcome our adversity can only be attained by invoking His grace and believing in the power of prayer first and then action." You have to first pray. That is the first human response. It can be the simple prayer, "Oh my God," or "Please, beloved," or just your heart, just crying out to God. Remember the earth. Remember the earth. And for us, as I said, even deeper, remember the soul of the earth. That your grace can come into it, because that is the real healing that can happen. It can only happen through grace. If I have any hope, it is the hope for grace. I mean, as a mystic, I know the power of grace. I know that grace can come when nothing else can. It is interesting, before somebody dies, there is a particular influx of grace that is given to the human being, to the soul, to help them to complete this lifetime. It's a gift given to help the human being make this transition from one life to the next. And maybe at this moment when something is dying in this world, grace can come. Our prayers are tremendously important. First, we witness, we are aware of what is happening. Then we feel what is happening. And then we have the heart's response, prayer. Beloved, help this world. Help the soul of the world. Help the remembrance to remain. I feel very strongly only the Beloved can heal his world. It was interesting at the end of this interview I had with Oprah, she asked me, you know, do you have one thing, main thing to say? I said, yes, that the world belongs to God. We have forgotten that, and I don't think we can heal the world except through grace. We don't have the understanding, we don't have the wisdom, and we don't have the power either. The forces of corruption, the power that is destroying this world, whether you call it multinational corporations or the oil business or certain darker forces that have been, particularly in the last 5 years, have become so dominant now globally. It used to be just in the wealthy industrialized nations. Now they are rampaging over the whole of the face of the world. They are so powerful. And they belong to darkness, I am completely convinced. They are forces of darkness. They go against everything that is sacred in life. They are actually destroying life. They're destroying the outer world, but the outer world can regenerate itself much more quickly than the inner world. You know, the jungle can return when the light in the inner world is diminished to such a degree it is very, very difficult to regenerate. Particularly as we don't have the shamans left who know about it. And nobody is interested in the inner world anyway. There is a certain darkness that is very, very destructive. And you don't want to fight it. I tried that. It likes a good fight, and it will engage you, and you don't fight it. But prayer, you don't engage directly. You just say to the Beloved, remember this world in its time of need. Yes, human beings are doing crazy things. Yes, they are destroying everything that you have made sacred, everything that remembers your name, everything that is a reflection of your light is being destroyed. We are. For what? I mean, this is what always amazes me. What do people get out of it? What does humanity get out of it? A refrigerator? Refrigerators are nice, but to destroy all the magic and beauty in the world for a refrigerator or a computer or it's very strange. It is like that line in the Bible, selling one's soul for 30 pieces of silver. Except it's not even real silver you get, it's some sort of alloy or bit money or something, you know. So the response is prayer. The deepest response is prayer, heartfelt prayer. Our teacher always said, if the heart has heard the prayer, God has heard the prayer. Pray however it moves you, just the remembrance of the earth, beloved. In prayer there is no time. Sometimes one is taken into deep states of prayer. Sometimes I realize I have been spending days inwardly just in prayer about something. Even in one's outer activities, you can be inwardly in prayer. Just as one can be inwardly sitting at the feet of one's teacher, whatever one's outer activity. It's an inner state. First prayer. First prayer. And of course, as I say, we work with love. A prayer of the heart. A simple offering from your heart to the Beloved's heart. And they meet within the heart of hearts in a human being. This is where your heart meets the Beloved's heart. It's the most simple, direct access to the divine. This is why the Sufis have made such a science of the heart, of this esoteric center of divine consciousness that is our spiritual heart. Because that is where we can have the most direct access to the divine. And then after prayer comes action. We live in a world and it requires a response, an outer response. Now personally, I do not feel now is the time for big projects. I don't think there is the energy to support them, the pure energy to support them. I think they will too easily get caught in the ideologies of the past, of the mechanisms and the mental framework of how our present civilization is constructed. I like the work of this English recovering environmentalist, Paul Kingsnorth, who says, and he was an environmentalist for a long time, and he said, we have to accept that it's over. This civilization is over. There's no point in trying to patch it up. It won't work. And too often then you just feed energy into the same ideology and you think you're doing something when you're just spinning wheels going nowhere. Yet action is required. There's this beautiful line of Mother Teresa when she says, small things with great love. I think we have to return to what is really essential, which is what is most human, because I mentioned we want something to be left. Something has to remain. And what is essentially human? That's why I really like loving kindness. Having loving kindness, care in one's community, small community. No point making a big community because it'll get lost. Small community, people. Just care, just love, doing things with love, small things with great love. Don't try to change the world. You can't change the world, but you can keep what is important. You can keep care. You can keep attention. And if you are drawn to help in your community, it's wonderful. But what matters always is the attitude that you bring to the action. We have forgotten that. We have been brainwashed, so we think action itself is what matters. Action itself is what achieves results. People believe that without looking around and seeing what the results action has achieved. I think, yes, there is important environmental action, but it has to be done with care. It has to be done with attention. It has to be done with love. It has to be done with the right attitude of respect. If you don't have a respect for the environment, what is the point? And I'm also a firm believer, because I believe in oneness, that each of us is where we need to be, and in our life we will be shown where we need to act. Because that's oneness. In oneness, it's like in an organism. Everything fits together. Everything works. I believe life is a living organism. And I firmly believe that life is trying to regenerate itself. It doesn't need a big plan because it actually knows how to do it. I'm a firm believer in life. Not in human ideas, but in life. And life is a living organism that knows how to regenerate if we work with it, if we breathe with it, if we sing with it, if we are in love with it. You know, in the end, we have to be in love with life, to be part of it, to be part of its mystery. Otherwise, we are just imposing our image onto life. And I have a firm conviction that life is a bit fed up with humanity imposing onto it how it should be. I'm firmly convinced that the earth is very, very old and very wise. I say at the moment it's a bit confused because it has this schizophrenic, self-destructive species running around on its surface very recently, behaving in the most bizarre way, and not listening and not paying attention and digging its own grave as fast as it possibly can. And so there is action, but it has to come from a place of reverence, from a place of listening, from a place of humility. We've made a mess. I don't know how it is for you, but in my own inner life, maybe in my outer life too, there are times I've made a real mess. I got it all wrong. I followed what I thought was right and realized it was a disaster. It didn't work. And out of that, there comes a certain humility, hopefully. I got it wrong. I was arrogant. I was full of hubris. I thought I knew better. And out of that humility, hopefully, I learned to listen. I learned to bow down a little bit, to be a little bit humble, to think, I don't really know how to do it. There is a greater wisdom, there is a greater understanding. Maybe I can listen to it. Maybe I can be attentive. Maybe it will teach me. And life and love and the beloved are waiting for that. Humanity has not quite got to that place yet. It's still in the midst of making a mess. So there is action to be done, because we live in a world of action. We live in a world where there are things to be done. And to me, from where I see it, it doesn't really matter how big or how little. It's where it comes from in your heart, because real healing comes from the heart. And real transformation comes from the heart. It comes with love. It comes a little bit of, when the Bible is said that you just have to have faith as much as a mustard seed. Tiny little bit. If it is true, it could change things. We can't change things. We can make a bigger mess and we seem to be going in that direction. Whether it's tending your garden or helping somebody cross the street or joining some small environmental project or bringing people together, I think small communities are very important. Because I think they are the living organisms of the future. Small communities can move. Sadly, in our culture, when we get anything too big, it becomes hierarchical, it becomes structured, and then it can't breathe, it can't respond. It may not happen in our lifetime. We may just be creating the seeds for what will be in 100 years' time. I don't know. We can respond from the right place and act from the right place with care. Those simple human values, loving kindness, attention, listening, humility. I feel at the moment that's all we can do. Anything else, it isn't the right time. There is an enormous wisdom in time. We don't really understand it because we treat time so badly. But part of the wisdom on Sufi path is learning to watch the time. There is times to do things, times not to do things, times to breathe in, times to breathe out. I don't think now is the time for big ideas, because there isn't the energy to enable them to fulfill. It's not there. The big corporations have that energy. And they have their plans. And there will come a time when real change will be possible. But at the moment, what's more important is to hold something that's true. I think it's more important to hold something in a small community that is true, that is real, that has love, than to make a gesture that isn't quite true, that isn't quite real.